Blog Talk Radio.
From the chaotic approach to immigration to the frigid whiteouts of the Far East and dodging ISIS beheaders while broadcasting from a small, nimble, low-tech or high-tech, low-profile burrito van, Kelly O'Connell 606, good morning to you. And I got a lot going on today. There is a few things to be aware of in general. And one of which is this massive storm that's going on back east, and especially in Boston. But New York is getting it. New York was supposed to get 3 to 6 inches of ice, and there's sub-zeros down in the south, which could even threaten such things as the citrus industry down in Florida if it were to go far enough. They're saying to avoid travel in the east. And I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday in Virginia, and he was telling me that it was I think he said it was 10 degrees there, and it was, you know, it was the middle of the day, or it was actually in the evening and the kind of the afternoon. So, he lives in Southern Virginia. So there's just a lot of bad weather out there. We've gotten so much bad weather in New York and Massachusetts and everything that it's, you know, it's kind of going without saying, but it just continues on. And it just seems like one storm after another is pounding into Boston, one month record, which is, you know, Boston gets a lot of snow usually during the winter. It's just something that we haven't seen for a while. I've got a little bit of a storm Octavia from the Weather Channel right here to fill you in.
We are going to see that snow really through the morning, afternoon hours, and then this thing is going to exit. So that's the good news here. There it is for you. Hour by hour, you can see that snow coming through. Boston is going to come into you on the light side. But, you know, we don't expect too many issues here in and around New York. We expect the ferries to be going. New Jersey Transit is cross-honoring bus, trains, and light rail passes. But, of course, Al, we do have problems in D.C. as they are, what was it, canceling all the bus service there?
That's a little bit hard to believe. And I've got some little bit more in case you're interested in what's happening in back east, which is, I guess if you're living here, you're definitely not interested in living back in a very snowy area. But
this video is sponsored by Travelers Insurance.
More on the south and snow and ice reports as well. Right here, I think it's 38 degrees now. I've just updated this thing. It's 42 degrees. So I'll give you your weather in just a second. Unless it's the same thing I just played, but dozens of low records possible.
Let's talk about the cold air that's causing all of this snow here into the Northeast, because we had temperatures this weekend we haven't seen in 10 years, and we're going to see more of that. So right now, everything is actually pretty mild along the East Coast, but you see that stuff in Buffalo? That's going to be more like our highs in the coming days. So hour by hour today, you can see our temperatures, teens, 20s, 30s. But look at this in Boston. I mean, our temperatures have been so cold, literally stuff we haven't seen in 10 years. And it's been cold to the south as well. And Tom, that's where we've had some icing. And we're already seeing almost 200,000 people without power because of this ice.
And here's just a little bit more on this Octavia winter storm.
It is actually a beautiful winter scene right here. You have the snow falling. Ohio River off to my left. I want to show you back behind me is Interstate 64. Decidedly more traffic right now, but they are taking.
And by the way, this is live from Louisville, Kentucky.
It's slow, so that's good to see. Louisville ready for this storm. The crews were out late last night. Take a look, not just with the plowing teams, but also the salt trucks. They have some 2 dozen-plus salt trucks at the ready across the district to handle the snowfall. And they've been out, as I mentioned, since late last night. They have some 250,000 tons of salt, an extra 100,000 or so in storage at the ready if needed. Obviously, they're going to be okay when it comes to salt. They've only had about 5 inches of snowfall before this for the season. And when you're looking ahead at the snowfall right now, we have, I would say, about an inch or a half to almost 2 inches of snow. It's light and fluffy on our way to maybe as much as half a foot plus, at least here in Louisville.
Now, they've got this storm stretching down through the Carolinas into Georgia and into Florida, as I was mentioning. There's one more thing in here for you. Although you might be laughing your rear end off, maybe you moved out from the Mideast, or pardon me, the Eastern Seaboard, and you're laughing at the people left behind. Here is one more clip, the most serious threat from this storm.
So winter storms can produce some really pretty looking colors on radar, but the problem is the prettier the colors, usually the worse the weather, especially when you start to get into some of those pinks. That is freezing rain, icing, okay? And we're dealing with some icing, some pretty significant ice on the order of about a tenth to a quarter of an inch from Little Rock to Memphis through Monday morning. Now, as we get into the afternoon, it's going to continue. It doesn't really wind down until about mid to late afternoon, but this stuff's going on all the way up toward even areas like Nashville. Look at this video from Monday morning in Nashville. Imagine rolling down your window and you're seeing something like that. Yeah, nice little satisfying punch there. And you break up the old ice, but it's been kind of a wintry mix in Nashville. Now, as you get farther toward the east, the problem's going to be later on Monday night into the morning on Tuesday. And there's some big cities here. We're talking Greenville up towards Charlotte, Raleigh, likely going to get some freezing rain. That's going to make an absolute mess out of the roads for the Tuesday morning commute.
And they are talking about a snow hurricane in Massachusetts.
When you set out to find new roads,
so
you obsess over perfection.
And this
evolve
was yesterday,
function.
So anyway, I know it's probably a little
elevate bit form
of interest in these untoward weather
and create the highest quality mid-size sedan.
For,
Chevrolet, the most awarded car company of 2014.
Forecast in a minute. Let me get you some of the headlines from the day, and I'll take them from a few different websites for you here, and kind of get across the board on the different players here. ABC News is saying storm blasts, Washington, D.C., cold front lurking. Rebels claim to capture key Ukraine rail hub of Debaltseve. San Diego officer shoots naked suspect after gun struggle. Oregon minnow is first taken off endangered list. New Hampshire mountain hiker who deactivated beacon found dead. I don't know anything about that. Fireball erupts in derailment and sends tanker into river. And they've declared a state of emergency in, I believe, West Virginia. Okay, and we've got the trial of the shooter of the American sniper going on, and the guy's saying that he knew he was wrong. You heard about the story, $1 billion hacked. And from Fox News, that was ABC News, Obama in check, federal judge blocks immigration executive orders. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Question, losing their touch, unions may turn on Dems over Keystone and Obamacare, deep freeze thousands without power. Haiti carnival whore, at least 20 electrocuted as power line falls on float. Wow. All right. And there's evacuations in West Virginia. All right. CNN headline, ISIS growing at warp speed. We're going to cover that too. Opinion, the apocalyptic prophecy that's driving ISIS that I haven't even read this yet, but I'll bet you the same thing we've been discussing here on the show. 3 out of 4 people, 75% of people want Obama, or it says give Obama what he wants to fight ISIS. I mean, does the guy already has what he needs, doesn't he? And here is some of your headlines from the Drudge. Jew hell in Paris. Main headline, federal judge stalls Obama's executive action on immigration. President's legal footing was, quote, eviscerated. White House is going to appeal. The ruling is online. ISIS on doorstep of Europe. Video prompts Egypt to bomb. Reverend Graham's storm is coming. Folks, we've been talking about this. And 523-1450, what are we going to do when these guys reach here? They're here already, obviously, but when they start really getting going to it. Army recruiters hindered by obesity and prescription drugs of candidates. Gunmen turn on Red Cross in Myanmar. Carly Fiorina, liberals think they are smarter, better than everybody else. Is that not the most obvious thing in the world? You're debating a true liberal. They're laughing at you. They act like you, got kicked out of third grade for reading deficiency. Anyway, I'll bring you a few more headlines here. I got some, speaking of Georgia, I've got some Ray Charles, live, George on my mind. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450-805-6180. We're going to get to it today, folks. And if there's a topic you're interested in and we're not discussing, bring it on. 805-6180. We'll be right back at 618 on the button.
And the whole day through. Yes, it's just this whole sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
Once you look around, these kids haven't got what you got.
Open, you take that.
Let's go.
How many more do you want?
In the fall.
They don't get up at dawn like you and go to work in the fields.
Open the water.
These kids don't do what you do. They can't even imagine it. You kids have the biggest hearts I've ever seen.
I reference McDonald's a lot because I go to McDonald's. I love the silence that follows that statement. Like I just admitted to support dog fighting or something.
How could you? McDonald's.
It's fun telling people you go to McDonald's. They'll give you that look like, oh, I didn't know I was better than you. No one admits to going to McDonald's. They sell 6 billion hamburgers a day. There's only 300 million people in this country. It's like, I'm not a calculus teacher. We're walking into a red and yellow building with a giant M over it.
What happened?
Right.
They'll pay it forward.
By the way, that's how Jesus sounds. Or at least I hope. You wouldn't want to meet Jesus and he's like, hey, y'all, hi, Dick. You been turning that other cheek, I give you that bonus back for a reason.
That bonus fry, it's never a regular size fry. It's always extra long. You're like, how'd I miss you?
Bonus fry, you got your own ketchup packet.
You always savor the last fry. You're like, I'm going to turn this into 10 bites. I'll meet up with you later. I got the bonus fry.
Fries are amazing. For what, like 7 minutes? And then they turn into something that's like
from the straw. But it was touching the fries, so.
Folks, good morning to you. Kelly here. It is a balmy 43 degrees outside, and so you're not going to, probably not going to need a real heavy coat today. As a matter of fact, why don't I just get you your own weather? We already heard about Boston. Who cares about Boston unless you're a Patriot or a Celtic fan? Got a little bit of KBIA coming up here in just a second. Would you live in a place that got 10 feet of snow every year?
You eventually must have with a parent or grandparent.
I'm hoping that they're kind enough to put it in a way to say, you know what, you're a danger to somebody else and to yourself.
When is someone too old to drive? ABC 7's Bernard Arias investigates Thursday night on ABC 7 at 10 after an all-new How to Get Away with Murder.
You could live in Maine.
Hello.
All right. Here is your local weather. KBIA.
Hello, everyone. I'm Storm Tracker Nicole Gomez. It will continue to be windy overnight. Forecast tomorrow will be much cooler, and we'll talk about our weekend if we're expecting more wind in the forecast. Now, highs across the borderland, 68 in El Paso, 69 Las Cruces, 45 was the high in Ruidoso, and 71 in TRC. So we have a cold front that will move in. The winds will continue into tomorrow, and our temperatures are also expected to be cooler. So just be prepared for those cooler temperatures. Now, our feature track model will start off Tuesday, 6 o'clock in the morning. where we have just a few clouds tracking through El Paso. And as you can see, most of the snowfall will remain along the higher elevations. Tuesday into your Wednesday, still seeing those mostly dry conditions around 8 o'clock in the morning. Still fairly quiet here at El Paso, Las Cruces, TRC, Silver City, mainly out to our west. Thursday around midnight, looks like we're seeing clear conditions. Now, our future temperature model, 10 o'clock on your Tuesday, we're in the 40s across much of the area, 30s along the higher elevations, 50 degrees by Tuesday in the afternoon, 11 o'clock in the evening. Notice those temperatures are still hanging on in the 40s. We're at 38 degrees Silver City, 40 dimming by Wednesday at 7 o'clock in the morning. So our wind gust tracker, again, the evening, we're still seeing those stronger winds, 34 miles per hour Las Cruces around 1 o'clock on Tuesday morning. 6 o'clock, still fairly strong winds in El Paso, according to this model. And by lunchtime on Tuesday, looks like the winds begin to gradually die down, light winds along the higher elevations. But this is what you can expect Tuesday afternoon. We're still calling for gusts at 30 miles per hour, lighter winds Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Notice those wind gusts will go up to 30 miles per hour. So for tomorrow, expect breezy winds, 61 degrees will be the high. And then by 8 o'clock, notice those temperatures if you have any plans on celebrating. 11 o'clock, we're at 45 degrees. So temperatures across the area tomorrow, we still have rain chances along the higher elevations, 62 degrees. We're Alamogordo. So here's a look at the next 7 days. Cooler tomorrow. We're back to 69 degrees on Wednesday, 74 on Thursday, breezy on Friday with temperatures in the 70s. Looks like those temperatures remain in the 70s through.
So it's going to warm up and then cool down a little bit. Let me ask you something. This is just a general question because it seems like this advancing ISIS. I just want to put this out there, 523-1450. What could we do to react to the threat of radical Islam that is within keeping with our standards, our beliefs, our historical approach to religion and freedom and everything that would still protect us? And I'm not talking about a politically correct approach, because I believe that is what is hobbling this our country now in this administration. Is we're caught up in some sort of a strange politically correct, it's like Alice in Wonderland, you know, everything is off and we can't react naturally because we're hobbled by this political correctness. And my problem is that within this, we're not having a realistic response. I mean, you know, it doesn't have any good. It's no good to have religious freedom if it ends up killing you, right? If it ends up killing everybody, if it ends up destroying our country, we're not going to give up religious freedom. But on the other hand, what can we do that is in keeping with how we view life, how, you know, our values, to, you know, that we can be fair to Muslims, but at the same time protect yourself. I think that's where we're at right now, isn't it? I mean, you can you can't politically correct your way out of this problem, and it seems to me that the current administration is acting like if they phrase things correctly, if they don't call it terrorism, if they call it a random shooting over in Paris or wherever, if they don't call the Fort Hood shooting terrorism, even though the shooter was screaming Allah Akbar as he was blasting his fellow soldiers, that I don't know if this administration believes that they're going to escape more terrorism. I don't know. I mean, it seems to me like ISIS would blow up whatever they could or kill whoever they could of the people that disagree with them, regardless of how they talk, you know? So anyway, that's just curious. 523-1450 on your opinion on these things. 805-6180 is the text. All right, so we have got some other stuff going on. But let me take a little break here right now, and I've got a little more Jim Gaffigan. As you recall, he was talking about McDonald's and French fries and stuff. He's I got a lot of reaction to this clip yesterday, so I guess people like Jim Gaffigan. But anyway, it's a comedy concert called Mr. Universe. Kelly O'Connell, 628, 629 on the button, 523-1450 to call in. It's about 43 degrees out there. We'll be right back.
Sometimes there's a loose fry in the bag. You know, the bonus fry? It's like Jesus is up in heaven. Give him an extra fry. He'll pay it forward. By the way, that's how Jesus sounds. Or at least I hope. You wouldn't want to meet Jesus and he's like, hey, I did. You can turn that other cheek. I give you that bonus fry for a rehang. Bonus fry, it's never a regular size fry. It's always extra long. You're like, how did I miss you? Bonus fry, you got your own ketchup packet. You always savor the last fry. You're like, I'm going to turn this into 10 bites. I'll meet up with you later. I got the bonus fry. Fries are amazing. For what, like 7 minutes? Then they turn into something that's likely not biodegradable.
So anyway, this 6:34. This derailment of this train is going to bring into the media and into the national conversation the dangers of carrying oil from some of these oil hotspots, from especially from the Bakken. The Bakken is the area up in North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, and so they don't have the capacity up there. I think it's $1 billion to put an oil refinery together, and a lot of people don't want to be around an oil refinery. So you've got things like the Keystone Pipeline that has been blocked for the entire last 6-7 years. So if you don't have a pipeline available, then you're going to use whatever else you can, which is these trains, these oil tankers. And so a train carrying more than 100 tankers of crude oil derailed during a snowstorm in southern West Virginia on Monday, and one of the tankers went into the Kanawha River, and it ignited at least 14 tankers and all in flames, even sparking a house fire. So they've got their water contaminated and houses burning, and they've evacuated the area. And one of the people said it was like an atomic bomb going off. He could feel the heat. I think that what's your response to this? My response is we need the oil. And, one of the things that I find kind of mystifying about the these people on the environmentalists on the far left is they want all of the good things from society and they don't want any of the bad things. They want energy and they want it to be clean. They want it to come from the sky, you know, and they're not willing to take any risks for that energy. But at the same time, you know, green energy is has limitations, you know, and it has certain costs. And then when you run into a situation where you've got windmills and stuff that are killing thousands of birds, what are you going to do? Then you've got one environmental group against another one. You know, so there's no such, you know, we're living in a universe or in a world with limitations and costs and dangers. And it's like the military, you know, we want ISIS to go away in the Middle East, but we don't want to send any ground troops in there. But and nobody else wants to send any ground troops in there. I just had a friend give me a story about, they said, this is kind of off the record story, that these I think Green Berets were sent into Kuwait and that they got involved in fights with ISIS and just clean their clocks. So, I think it is something that we need to take care of. Whoever you want to fault for, you know, I guess it's easy to fault the president on ISIS, but we need to have a response. And so here's a question: could the Congress and Senate on their own go in and create a war for ISIS? you know, thinking about it and saying that we're doing everything we can, it doesn't seem to be really addressing the issue. Yeah, you've got Christians all across the Middle East that are getting killed, and you know, they're beheading these people, and where they're doing it at, they're setting up these beheading spots, and the blood is soaked with blood. It's red, and you know, these piles of corpses. And what are these people achieving, you know? I mean, so anyway, I just think that we need to have a response. And I think everybody that talks about this or thinks about it understands and agrees that we need to do something about it. But what are we going to do? 523-1450, what should we do? You know, what should be done? And, you know, I just think that if we don't do this now, we're going to, and it really doesn't matter what you think of the president. It really doesn't matter what you think of the current Congress or where we've been the last 5 or 10, 20 years. It's going to be a situation where the upshot's going to be that we are, you know, future generations are going to look back. People that don't really have any kind of, you know, a connection to Obama or anybody else are going to look back and say, how did we get to this point? And, you know, why were we left with this, you know, if let's just say that ISIS gets all of this wealth from the oil industry where they could have billions of dollars. What if you were a madman, what could you do with billions of dollars? Let's just say your whole purpose was to take over land in the Middle East, and you were part of a guerrilla army, and your whole purpose, the whole purpose of your life was to create this state. What could you do with $1 billion or $5 billion, $10 billion? If they sell all this oil and get all the money, it seems to me they could buy from Russia or somewhere else a nuclear weapon. Now, if they set off a nuclear weapon anywhere in the Middle East, we're not just talking Israel, they set off a nuclear weapon anywhere, it could start World War III. You know? Anyway, here's a little more Ray Charles for you. 523-1450 to call in. 640, Kelly O'Connell Show, and 805-6180. I'll come back and read your text. Here's a little more Ray Charles.
I said, Georgia, no. Oh, Georgia. And the song of you.
Got no response.
It took 4 years, but Hannah Scandera is no longer the education secretary designate. A little over an hour ago, the state Senate voted to confirm Scandera.
Action 7 News reporter Kirsten Swanson just spoke exclusively to the new secretary. She's live at the Roundhouse with Scandera's reaction.
Yeah, Doug and Shelley, I just got finished up talking to Scandera. She is very...
Good morning, it's Kelly. It is 6:43, and we got a little news from about Hannah Scandera, no longer the would-be education secretary in New Mexico. She's now in like Flynn. Check this out.
Got no response.
It took 4 years, but Hannah Scandera is no longer the education secretary designate. A little over an hour ago, the state Senate voted to confirm Scandera.
Action 7 News reporter Kirsten Swanson just spoke exclusively to the new secretary. She's live at the Roundhouse with Scandera's reaction.
Yeah, Doug and Shelley, I just got finished up talking to Scandera. She is very obviously tired from her day all day here at the Roundhouse, but says she's relieved. She says she thinks that lawmakers finally put politics aside to go ahead and confirm her as education secretary. It's been a long road for Scandera. Governor Martinez appointed her 4 years ago to this position. The Senate would not take up a confirmation. In fact, today is the first time this issue has even hit the Senate floor. As a committee debated this morning, Scandera heard from her supporters, but also from those who were very critical of her. Educators spoke out saying she's not qualified for the position. She tells me those comments don't affect her commitment to New Mexico students.
I would say more than relieved. I would say, like I said, humbled and excited, knowing that my conviction to serve the state remains and would have continued regardless of the outcome. But this outcome is a significant moment where we can come together as adults and really begin to focus.
Now, after nearly 2 hours of debate, the Senate confirmed her with a vote of 22-19. During that debate period, there were many people in the Senate gallery, many of which were teachers and educators, because remember, today's President's Day, many of them don't have school today. Reporting live from the Roundhouse, Kirsten Swanson, KOAT Action 7 News.
And we just received statement from Governor Martinez's office. A spokesperson says the governor is pleased with the vote today. The governor and secretary will continue to put the needs and achievements of our students first as we work to improve their opportunities for success.
And the federal officials say a Mexican wolf removed from Brooklyn Zoo in suburban Chicago as part of a recovery program in the wild has been found dead in western New Mexico. No suicide note was found. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service told the Chicago Tribune that the body of the wolf named Ernesta was found January 7th in Gila Wilderness area. Some fast food wrappers were found nearby. Maybe she was on a bad diet. Officials investigating cause of death. She was born in captivity in 2008, and she came to Brookfield Zoo in 2010, released in the wild in 2014. While pregnant, she had six pups. Maybe her welfare didn't come in. Brookfield Zoo Associate Curator of Mammals, Joan Daniel, says staffers are saddened about her death, but encouraged because we know her offspring are in the wild and wreaking havoc on local farmers. All right. Hey, how about a little more French fry humor? Jim Gaffigan. We'll take a little break here. McDonald's.
You ever make the mistake of reheating McDonald's fries in the microwave? They become packing peanuts. It doesn't stop you from eating them. You're like, these aren't even good anymore. How are yours? Yeah, yours aren't good either. Fries can't get cold. Shakes can't get warm. You ever leave a McDonald's shake out for an hour? Reality sets in. Oh, this isn't even made from milk. Just some kind of chocolate mucus. But we know all this, yeah. We know those McDonald's commercials aren't realistic, yeah. I just like to see one commercial that showed people 5 minutes after they ate McDonald's. Oh. Now I need a cigarette. I deserve a cigarette break today. But they get us in there, yeah. Some of those deals they offer are just cruel. Two Big Macs for $2? I drive by, I'm like, well, I don't want to lose money on this. I'll get 80 of them. And some of you are like, sorry, white trashy guy, I don't eat McDonald's. I have friends that brag about not going to McDonald's. I would never go to McDonald's. Well, McDonald's wouldn't want you because you're a dick. Why are people acting like they're better than McDonald's? Why are people acting like they're better than McDonald's? But you may have never set foot at McDonald's, but you have your own McDonald's. You know, maybe instead of buying a Big Mac, you read Us Weekly. Hey, that's still McDonald's. It's just served up a little different. Maybe your McDonald's is telling yourself that Starbucks Frappuccino is not a milkshake. Or maybe you watch Glee. It's all McDonald's. McDonald's of the soul. Momentary pleasure followed by incredible guilt, eventually leading to cancer. said put a McDonald's, but
hey, Kelly here at 6:50, and today is the 17th of February, 2015. Don't Anna County Commissioners to discuss minimum wage impact on county budget. We'll have to get Ben Rossin in here to talk about that, or maybe even Miguel Silva. And they're meeting Tuesday, which is, I guess, today. The city's minimum wage rate increased from $7.50 per hour, a state set rate, to $8.40 per hour in January. Two more phases will happen in upcoming years, and we've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Kelly, Rob. Good morning.
Good morning, Rob. What's going on?
So you asked earlier, what can we do about ISIS?
Yeah.
Napalm.
Palm is the way to the future. Okay. How about stateside?
Napalm.
Oh, napalm is the answer. All right. that reduces the debate, I guess.
Yeah, I think you start taking them out en masse, and the ones who just sit by and silently applaud what these radicals are doing will have second thought and do the right thing, I think.
Yeah, I guess that's possible. Now, let me ask you this, and I know you're a student of history. How could we react with Islam and the possibility of, I guess he's done, so. All right, there goes that conversation. What can we do? Let's just say that we project ourselves
in
the future and we see within X number of years Muslim radicals are regularly blowing stuff up and shooting people in America like they're doing in Europe. At some point, we're going to have to address this in a way that we really haven't done so far. I mean, we had the attack kind of people. I think most people see the attack on 9/11 as from outside, even though those people were living here. And so they don't, you know, that's not a national problem. But what if you get people that are living here, they're sleeper cells or there have been a number of non-Middle Eastern Muslims that have, there's this G.I. Jane, they're Jihad Jane and such. Is there anything that we can do to react to this situation that would be in keeping with America's values, that would make us more safer? Or do we have to just take it in the shorts and kind of approach it as the administration is now, not even really address the issue in a lot of ways? Here is a conversation with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. ISIS represents Islam like the KKK represents Christianity. Oh, we got another phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Sorry, Kelly, Rob, my cell phone ran out of power. I'm on the house phone.
So what could we do in keeping with American values to deal with the Islamic threat while still giving Muslims their rights as Americans or as immigrants, whatever, however you want to put it?
I didn't read the article. I saw a headline this morning on Yahoo about no-go zones because they have Sharia law in some cities in America already. I think that needs to stop.
Where'd you see that?
If somebody wants to do Sharia law in their own home, okay.
Where'd you see that?
It was on Yahoo. If you go to the front page, I didn't read the story yet.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, so the problem in Paris is that they've given parts of the city over to these people with the idea that they're going to be happy if they have their own place. And then they found that these places become a locus, a base for which to expand their influence.
Right. I think they get emboldened by that, you know, and plus they see the French allowing it as a weakness, and they love that.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, you know, Islam comes out of has the mindset of coming out of the time when force rules. You know, you can talk all you want, but it's what you do, how you back up your words that means anything.
Right. You just sit there and let them walk over you and you're nothing. You give them a bloody nose, and, you know, you start to get their respect.
But what can we do in keeping with Americans? Because we don't want to give up our values. I mean, that which has made this the best place to live in the world for the last 100 years or 200, 300 years.
You follow the Constitution.
All right. What part of it?
Like for the rest of us.
What part of it?
All of it.
Could you be more specific?
Well, you're talking about individual rights versus state rights, or what part are you talking about?
We're talking about the right of religious freedom to do whatever you want as part of your religion, and then you've got this, let's just say it's 1% of Muslims that are either support or involved in radical activities. That could still be a lot of people, even in a country like the United States. How do you react? You can't react after everything happens every time, can you?
I can't go out in town and say, well, my religion allows the cutting off of people's head, because that infringes on the rights of the people whose head I'm cutting off. So I think, you know, the framers weren't idiots. They saw these kind of problems, maybe not to this degree or specificity, but, you know, your rights extend as far as your body and your personal space and maybe the property that you own and, you know, a little bit of area, say, a foot from you. But when you start impinging on my area, then you're breaking the law.
Yeah, but, you know, you can talk. I mean, it's kind of a gray area. You can't foment violence, but I mean, you know, you could talk about your beliefs involving, you know, you can talk about, well, it's kind of a gray area, but it's not true that you can't talk about violence. You just can't try to encourage other people to be violent or be violent yourself. It seems to me like if we get a lot of these attacks, we're going to change our opinion on this and possibly change the law. But how are we going to do it?
How should we do it, or how will we probably do it?
How will we probably do it?
Oh, we'll take away everybody's rights to do anything, just like they've been trying to do for the last 30, 40 years.
I don't know. I mean, that's a very broad statement. And
you look at the Patriot Act. You know, 95% of what's in that has nothing to do with going after extremists. You know, it hurts the people that it's supposedly protecting.
Yeah, I mean, the Patriot Act is overkill to the nth degree. My problem with the Patriot Act is it didn't, you know, we as a community, as a nation, didn't train ourselves to be more vigilant. We became these pawns in the hands of the Homeland Security, in a sense. And, you know, if we had gotten more educated, then we would be safer and have more freedom. But, Rob, I'm out of time. Anything else?
No, man. Have a good morning.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. All right, folks, so what can we do to protect ourselves from radical Islam? Instead of sitting around wringing our hands and pretending freedom of religion is an infinite right, we've got to see how it fits in with our life now in a time of terrorism. Kelly O'Connell, 6:59 on the button. We'll take you out with some Georgia On My Mind on a break on the hour. We'll be right back.
Comes as a sweet and clear, smooth light. Other arms reach out to me. Other eyes smile tenderly. Still in the
Hey, Nate called me. I called him back 5 times. He's got to be awake. Are you not going to? Well, you guys will be fine. What's up, man? Awesome. Thanks a lot, man. Hey, it's Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. This is Joyce. Haven't called you for a while, but I've got some things to add to your conversation.
Oh, okay. This is who?
Joyce.
Joyce, I had the volume turned down. How's it going?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Good, good. We're going to be
good.
It will be on in about 30 seconds.
Okay.
What's on your mind?
Well, I've had an idea in my head for a while, and I'm thinking about all of the United States possible terrorists that we're raising here. And I would imagine that keeping tabs on those people is a tremendous load in terms of manpower and money.
Hold on. Okay, hold on just a second.
Sure.
What was your first name again?
Joyce.
Joyce, okay, sorry. A little scatterbrain this morning.
I'm sorry, should I talk?
What's that? Hold on just a second.
Uh-huh.
It is Kelly here, and we've got Joyce on the line, and she had been sparked by something we were talking about on the air having to do with Islam and stuff going on in America. And Joyce, thanks for calling, and it has been a while since you called in. I hope you're well, and What is your take on this American Islam and the threat?
Well, my thought is that keeping an eye on our homegrown terrorists must be a terrible expense in terms of money and manpower. And my thought, and I'm not trying to be silly here, is to take all of these little terrorist children. And if they want to go to the Middle East, we should let them go. As a matter of fact, we should buy them a ticket. But they have a one-way ticket. They don't get to come back. I think it's better to have your enemies sort of contained in one area than here under our noses. And for people who will come in here from the Middle East, they should be coming in on visas. I used to travel a lot in the day, and I had to have visas, and they last for so long, and you have to report in, or somebody's supposed to come look for you. So I don't see a problem with that, and I thought it was a wonderful idea. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I mean, here's my thing, is the government has kind of this official, this kind of, like, benign neglect of people that are here, that are either emigres or they're here on visas. Their theory is that America is a better country if we don't pay as much attention to these people, if we don't hold them under the law and everything. And I can't help but wonder if the government is turning a blind eye towards, just to say, Latino, illegal people coming from South, if that won't also affect our attitude towards any other group of people that would be here that would be Muslim. Now, your specific question is homegrown terrorists. if we get youngsters that fall in love with Islam, maybe give them a one-way ticket. I mean, it sounds like a great answer, but it seems to me like the way you're going to find out that they're really head over heels in love with Islam is they might, you know, they might shoot somebody.
Well, yeah, but we've been stopping them at airports. I mean, we're obviously aware of them. We're stopping them at airports and preventing them from going. Let them go. Why do we want them here?
Well, we don't, you know, somebody goes to, here's what they were doing in the UK, which I think was totally ridiculous. They're allowing these people, if they come back to the country from fighting in Syria, which is entering jihad, you come back from that and then you get put in a camp to make you less of a radical. And I mean, it seems to me if somebody leaves from here to go fight in jihad that they've get, like you say, they've given up their American citizenship. You got to have that as a rule. I can't imagine that this president agonizes over stuff like this that would seem common sense to anybody else. So,
very simplistic. I don't understand. And, you know, cut down on the man hours and let those men go on to more important things. And I think that they should just, you know, get those visas in order and perhaps start to limit immigration. I mean, you know, yeah, it's a wonderful thing, but we've had a little too much. We don't have jobs for these people. We don't have jobs for us, you know.
Well, it's been reported that the number of Muslim people being allowed to emigrate to America, or people from the Middle East, maybe it'd be more correct, is being ramped up. Now, I haven't seen that confirmed in the media, but I haven't really looked on it either.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. I don't know. And my heart goes out to these people. I mean, you know, anybody who cuts off heads and, you know, and then worse yet involves children in this or burns somebody alive. I mean, there's a special place in hell for those people. You know, I mean, it's just beyond the beyond, you know. So let's put all our enemies in one place so we know that where they are and let's take care of them.
Yeah, I don't know. We got a real problem in our hands. And part of the problem is this idea that we're going to bury the subject and not talk about it, and that's somehow going to make us safer. And I just think that this culture right now, the people on the left are infuriated when the topic of Islam comes up, and they don't want to talk about it, and they don't want to, that nobody on the left wants to discuss the possibility of stateside terrorism. But we, you know, it was Enoch Powell, this he was a member of parliament from the UK. He was from Ireland, Northern Ireland, I think. He said that the whole job of being a leader is to see, you know, make plans for the foreseeable problems that are coming up. This is a foreseeable problem. If we don't have a plan, it's just going to blow up in our face. No pun
Absolutely.
Intended.
Absolutely. It's moving its way across the Middle East, into Africa, and into Europe, and it will be marching to our doors before we know it. So absolutely right, Kelly. And one more thing. You know, I mean, I listen to your show whenever I can, and I agree with most of the things you say. But, you know, it's time for us to stop this left and right talk. You know, I mean, most of us are in the middle, and, you know, it doesn't help anything to, you know, the left does this and the right does that. You know, I don't think that the name calling helps anybody.
Well, it's not really name calling so much from my perspective as it's trying to describe the people who believe certain things and what the impact of those beliefs are. And if you throw out all of these descriptions, then what are we talking about?
Yeah, I guess that's true. But, you know, so many of us are, you know, wearing coats of many colors. We're not one or the other.
I appreciate that. I guess my show is meant as much for somebody like you as anybody else that is kind of maybe a little bit in the middle, a little taking from the left, a little taking from the right. I think that we do have to all come along here, but we do. I think we need to identify something that is not a good thing there, which is, any ideas that say, any beliefs that promote the idea that if we ignore Islam, it'll go away, radical Islam.
Absolutely right. And if there is truly Sharia law going on, and I'm not sure that that's really true, but if indeed it is on our shores, that has to be put a stop to immediately, legally, you know.
And
I have another thought,
yeah,
too.
Go ahead.
One more?
Yeah, go ahead.
I, you know, as far as my idea with the visas, and I am totally serious about that. I've, like I said, I've had to apply for visas any number of times. If your country is not safe enough and our embassies are not protected enough to have a consulate there, then you don't get to come. You know, I mean, it's that simple. I'm sorry. Our consulates have to be protected. They have to be safe, or you don't get your visa and you don't get to come.
Well,
I mean,
what do you hear when you hear people are, the Marines are coming from Yemen and they were forced to leave their weapons behind? It seems to me there is kind of a stunning disconnect with reality in which that we're looking at the rest of the world is through this prism that is distorting things so much that we can't even be ourselves anymore.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Kelly. It's absolutely insane. So, yeah, the world has gone mad and, you know, stop the world, I want to get off, that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I got you. Well, I appreciate the – let me ask you one more thing since you consider yourself maybe a little bit more in the middle. Would it be possible – I've been kind of kicking this around in my mind – if you were to categorize Islam as a political system / religion, because it seems to me that's how it's operating. And then if you did it that way, maybe, I mean, I'm not trying to take anybody's rights away, but I'm thinking if you operate differently, if there's the violence around the world is largely political or, you know, religious violence, political violence seems to me to be tied to this one belief. Isn't it different than all the other religions?
I mean, you pose an interesting question, but, don't forget that it's a very small, amount of people, even though, you know, as you say, they could do tremendous damage, but a very small group of people who have taken over a religion, you know, and have turned it into madness.
Well, Joyce, or there has been this violence that's been at the heart of Islam that we haven't talked about for a while because it makes us uncomfortable. We see religion as a positive thing. We see our country born out of a religious struggle. We look around and we see, you know, basically Hindus getting along with Buddhists, and we're enthusiastic about Catholicism and Protestantism, and then we look at Islam and we see that it's somehow connected to all this crazy violence, and we don't want to accept it because it conflicts with our definition in our minds of what a religion is.
Interesting thought. I would have to think about your premise, but there may be a possibility here. It's a good thought.
Well, thanks for the call, Joyce. Don't be a stranger.
My pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, have a great day. Bye-bye. All right, folks, so what if we treated Islam in a different category because it acts differently? Now, what is a religion anyway? I was kind of thinking about this. I mean, you could start any religion as long as it had a certain number of characteristics. And some people say, well, look at Scientology. That's an example of somebody just starting up. A guy that was a science fiction writer comes up with this essentially science, what appears to be a science fiction religion. I mean, what is religion, you know? So how do we define it? And if someone is going around killing in the name of religion, does it make them a non-religion? Or does it mean that our definition of religion is too rigid? Or that we need to give ourselves the right to respond to religion in a way that, you know, and this is where this gets difficult. Nobody wants their own religion or their agnosticism or atheism to be used against him. I understand that, but it would just seem to me like we're a little bit stuck right here, and that, you know, there's nothing wrong with talking about, you know, what ifs, especially if you know they're going to happen at some point. Here is another call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's tow truck driving buddy John.
John, what's up?
Well, I was just thinking that last thought you put out there, was the KKK a religion? Because they were committing murders in name of their faith.
Yeah.
So was that a religion?
And Arianism, I mean, this Arianism, some of it is very religious, or, you know, it's some of these people who are into the Arian thing, they've got their own. And you've also got two branches of Arianism. Nazis. The Nazis had a religious element of theirs, and so if you came up to Nazism, is it a political system? Is it a means for killing people? What is it?
It's a means of destroying anyone that's not like-minded and doesn't match certain physical characteristics as far as Nazism, and then like the Aryan Brotherhood. But then you also have, on the other hand, you have the Aryan Nation, which they're not particularly against anyone. They're just for the propagation of the white race. There's no hatred or radical actions there, but, you know, they have a very narrow view. So, I mean, you know, like the KKK, you know, they killed in the name of their faith, but that doesn't make it a religion. That just makes it a very radical group. Same thing with these radical Islamists. Most people that follow Islam or Muslims or like that are not, they're not radical, they're not violent, they're not really against anyone, they just have their own particular religion. So, you know, we need to separate them. They're radical Islamists, they're not Islam,
John,
they are not Muslim.
John,
they're just a little
John,
group that's
John,
using
me,
that
come on
as a tool
John, listen,
to reach their
John,
own ends.
John, listen, if people went around with a sticker pasted on their forehead, I am a member of radical Islam, then that we wouldn't have a problem. We would just take those people and, you know, whatever, deport them or whatever. It is the people that are involved in it that are not telling others, you know, they're hiding it, because if they don't hide it, then they'll be stopped. I mean, to me, that's a false explanation of what's going on out there. So the issue is, how do you define Islam?
Well, you define Islam as what it's been historically. It's not this radical group. Islam, at one point, Muslim religion was responsible for a lot of education and gains in science and technology.
John, listen to me. How do you know that's what Islam is? I mean, why are we've had a limited amount of exposure to this religion. How can you just tell me by definition? What are you using as proof of the fact that you know that Islam is by definition historically peaceful, which seems to be your claim? I just want to know why you're saying that, so I can be convinced.
Look at the history of Moorish Spain. They were a center of learning. I mean, one of the greatest things about the pilgrimage to Mecca was the knowledge and different experiences that each of the pilgrims brought. And it wasn't a violent religion at all. These guys are just radicals, and they're just using
this as
an excuse
to justify what they're doing. Listen, back and forth here. If you study the history of Islam, hold on, we got two other calls at the same time. Hold on a second. Kelly O'Connell, I'll put you on hold. It's Kelly O'Connell, I'll put you on hold. Listen, John, I got to go to break. I'm way over, but you want to just hang on?
Yeah, I'll hang on,
hold
man.
On. All right, folks, got to go to break right now. We'll be right back. Got three. One of them dropped off. We'll be right back.
Diabetes.
Hey, who's this?
Hi, this is Beverly.
Hey, Beverly. What do you want?
The role of all
Beverly.
The
Beverly.
Goal
Beverly.
Of all
Beverly.
Muslims.
Beverly, can you hear me?
Yeah.
We're not on the air.
I know.
Well, what are we? What do you want to talk about?
The goal of Islam is a worldwide caliphate.
Of course
under
is.
Sharia law.
Of course. Hey, Beverly, let me put you on hold. I want to bring your comments on the air, okay?
I'd rather not.
Okay. All right. I'll let everybody know your comment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right, folks, Kelly here. And I've got John on the line. I got a couple of calls. If you called in, if anybody else called in, we got two calls at once. Hold on 1 second, John. It's Kelly here. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly. This is Bill.
Bill, hold on. Bill,
hold on.
Bill, yeah. Yes, hold on. I'll put you on hold. John, let me ask you this, though. I mean, people have seen that in the history of Islam, there's been violence, and it seems to be still happening, whereas in Catholicism and Protestantism, if there was violence, it doesn't seem to be happening anymore. What can we do?
Well, I mean, you've got to deal with these people on their own terms. You know, the same way that they're responding to the world around them, we've got to deal with them that exact same way. If they want to deal with the world in violence and brutality, we have to respond in kind. That's the only language that they understand, and that's the only thing they'll respect, is if we can dominate them physically. And, you know, and that's just what's got to happen. It's a sad thing, but, you know, that's the only way you can deal with these folks. But that's not the entire Muslim religion.
Right, but I mean, obviously, there are some people in the Islamic religion that are very peaceful. That's not the problem. It seems, though, that this is recurring all around the world, even people who don't know each other. It's not one group. It's a number of different groups that believe that their religion allows them to be violent. It's those people that are the source of the conversation.
Okay, and, you know, and when you identify those people, then you've got to respond to them with overwhelming violence.
But
that's
what if
the only thing
America,
that they understand.
John, what if they're living in a sleeper cell in America? What? How? They're not going to go around and say, "I believe in killing people," to every person they meet.
Well, they're not going to make it easy because at heart they're basically cowards.
Well,
so I mean, they're not going to stand up and proclaim themselves publicly.
John, it's not whether they're cowards or not. It's the rest of the Americans who are possible victims, potential victims to violence, who want to make the country safer. How are we supposed to do? You can have a theory, but if there is a violence attached to the religion, it seems to me it presents a dilemma, because we're not going to give up the freedom of religion. But on the other hand, it seems like one of the religions has an element that is violent, no matter how far, it doesn't even matter how far back. It's right now, there's a certain percentage of Islam that supports jihad.
Okay, but we're overcomplicating this. I mean, everybody has a right to their own brand of religion, but when your brand of religion promotes violence against other folks just for the fact that you're not part of their group, you respond to them with violence. It's a horrible thing, but it's also necessary.
All right, so
and
then,
every
John,
person has
John,
to
hold
be,
on a second.
You know,
back
everybody's got to be aware.
If you're saying that, then we all need to have our Second Amendment rights. We need to, everybody needs to be, how about we have a law that everybody carries, every American citizen carries a weapon, so that if there are outbreaks, we can deal with them on the spot?
Well, there already is a law. It's the Second Amendment. We all have
John,
the right
listen,
to
John,
carry
you're
guns, to keep and bear arms, to protect
John,
ourselves.
Listen.
So we're making
John,
a big deal out of something that
John,
is,
John,
you know,
gotta,
shouldn't be such
John,
a big
listen.
Deal.
John, I got to go. I got to take a break here. But anyway, you're changing the question. The Second Amendment doesn't demand that everybody have a weapon. That's not what the question
No.
Just
it
hold
just
on.
Gives
John,
you the right to carry
John.
A weapon if that's how
anyway,
you prefer
John,
to defend
John,
gotta, yourself.
I got to end the conversation. Thanks for the call. All right, folks, if you call and listen to me, Don't continue to talk and talk if I try to make a point. All right, it's 727, Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450. I know these are passionate subjects, but a little back and forth there. Oh, we'll be right back, folks, 727, and I'll give you a little bit of Ray Charles right here. And Bill, call on back here. And somebody called in and said what the Muslims want is a world caliphate. That's all there is to it. Here's Ray Charles, You Don't Know Me, a little country Charles. And Ray Charles had a country period that lasted about 10 years. Check this out.
Oh, you give your hand to me, and then you say hello, and I can hardly speak. My heart is beating so, and anyone can tell. You think you know me well, but you don't know me.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Good morning. This is Art.
Hey, Art, what's going on?
I had a few comments about, you know, like not just John,
Art,
but the
Art.
Topic. In.
Hey, this is Kelly. Who's this?
This is Beverly McClure.
Hey, hold on a second.
Okay.
Art.
Hello?
Art, listen, when you're talking, listen for me talking because I had another call come in. But if we're on the air, just let me kind of go back and forth with you a little bit, okay?
Okay, would you do me a favor? Just say something. When I say go, you say something immediately because I think there might be a delay. So
there might be, but we have to work with the system we have. All right,
hold on
just a second. Beverly, what did you want to talk about?
Well, we can talk about what's going on in the session if you want. We're about halfway through.
Okay, all right. We've got 2 minutes of about a minute of ad, and I'll be right back, okay?
Okay, perfect.
Thanks. Hey, Art.
Yes, sir.
I've got a lady that's calling in for she's going to tell us about the session. She's a call-in guest from up north. Can you call back when she's off?
Of course.
Thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate you working with me.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Beverly.
Yes, sir.
We were on the show arguing about Islam, so things got a little bit heated.
Uh oh.
But this is fine to shift gears.
Okay.
How are things up north?
You know, it depends on what you consider good. If you don't want anything to happen, you're probably liking it. If you want to get some stuff passed, you're probably not so much liking it.
All right, so. Makes sense.
Well, it's just slow moving, so.
Well, we're just about on the air.
Okay.
And Beverly, what's the name of the organization? I forgot.
That's the New Mexico Association of Commerce and Industry.
It's mm-hmm. Kelly here, and we've got Beverly McCure from the New Mexico. Beverly, what's your group?
So we're the New Mexico Association of Commerce and Industry, and we serve as the New Mexico Chamber of Commerce. So we represent all business, large and small, in all geographic sectors.
And Beverly's been on the show a number of times, so welcome back, Beverly. She's calling down from up north. What is happening up north?
Well, if you are looking for pro-business legislation, we do have some legislation that is moving that will help business leaders. One of those is some changes to the workers' comp and some reform on that. One will reduce the amount that a worker that's under the influence of drug or alcohol and is hurt on the job is able to collect. Another limits temporary disability, to 700 weeks. Now, 700 weeks, by the way, is 13 and a half years, but there was a court case recently that extended that beyond that. So imagine when you're a small employer and you've got an employee out on temporary disability for up to 700 weeks. And so we're trying to do some reform on that and overcome the court case that made some changes to that. So that's pretty exciting to see that move forward. We also have a headquarters bill that's moving. And what that basically says is, depending on your function, not your size, if you're based here in New Mexico and but you have business operations in other states, we'd like to give you a tax incentive to have your regional or your national headquarters here in New Mexico. And we've got some smaller businesses that'll benefit from that. That's not a big corporation bill. So it's exciting to see some of those things begin to move. And then we can also talk about right to work if you want and where that legislation is and what we think's happening.
That's a big deal, and it's a big deal nationally. And could you add a little bit on minimum wage? Because I'd love to hear your opinion.
Yeah, so there, of course, have been several pieces of legislation to increase the minimum wage. The ones that are the most troubling are those that have an indexing, which means that automatically on January 1st, regardless, that the minimum wage would go up. So imagine being a business person trying to budget and not knowing, and knowing that regardless of the economy, every January you have the wage will go up. So those bills have died, but that said, the right to work piece of legislation, and remember, right to work is not an anti-union bill, and it doesn't prevent anyone from collective bargaining or joining a union. But the right to work basically says if you're an employee and you go to work for a union shop, you're not forced to pay dues. And that bill, believe it or not, has been hotly contested. And part of that is because the unions have really misled their members into believing that if this piece of legislation passes, that jobs, they'll lose their insurance, that they won't be able to pay their mortgage. And so the debate on that bill, every time it's been anywhere, it's been 4 to 5 hours with people standing in line to testify against it. So the bill was amended a couple of ways. One, allows an employer to choose whether or not they want to be right to work. In other words, there are some of our employers who say, I really want a union shop. I don't want to have some employees union and some not. So that allows the employer to make that decision. And then Representative Gentry, there's actually a committee substitute, which would raise the minimum wage to $8 an hour with $7.50 for anyone that's in their first 6 months of training. And so that bill now, Right to Work, basically says we'll increase the minimum wage one time if you give us Right to Work. So it'll be interesting. That bill is going to be debated on the House floor Wednesday. And just as a reminder, wherever you are in the state, all of the legislative committees and the House and Senate floor sessions are webcast. So if you go on the New Mexico Legislative website, you're able to watch all of this take place. So Wednesday would probably be an interesting time to tune in and watch the legislature at work.
What do you I was going to ask you, what was your number one goal? I got two questions for you. What was your number one goal entering into this session? But people were calling up and saying there's no way that we doubled our exports, you know, that we put an extra $1 billion into the economy. People were kind of mystified by that. How accurate are those numbers that the governor released?
Well, those numbers certainly are being debated, as are the jobs number. November, they tell us there's a new way of reporting this. We show we added 14,000 jobs in December over December, 13,000 jobs across the state. And certainly my members are saying we don't feel that. We don't see that. So I think you're seeing that in certain pockets. Mining is a particular in Silver City. It continues to add employees. We've got some construction going on in the state that we see employees. Those numbers were specific to trade with and export with Mexico. I heard Secretary Barella actually testifying in front of committee because that question has come up a lot. Where is this business and where are these jobs? I think we're seeing a lot of that in the southern part of the state. And the other thing we have to remember is those numbers were released, and you know, December's kind of a lag. So when the oil prices, I don't think we've really seen the new numbers now that the price of oil is down. So we don't have that most recent data.
All right. So how's the economy in New Mexico?
So I would say the economy is at best flat, even with that job growth. We're about 1.7, so we hadn't even hit 2% job growth across the state. It's also been a north versus south economy. The southern part of the state has really propped up the state budget,
really
propped up those numbers, with Albuquerque going north not doing well. So oil is what keeps our state budget healthy, which right now we're not looking at a healthy budget. We may actually see we're hoping for a flat budget and not cuts, but we may have to make some adjustments to the budget because the price of oil is so down. And just as a reminder, for every dollar that the price of oil changes, it's a $7 million impact to the general budget. So we started out thinking we had a couple of hundred million new money. The price of oil goes down, so you just start deducting $7 million, deducting $7 million. Now we're down to probably maybe 60, maybe $80 million new quote-unquote dollars. And for the most part in the Senate, Senator John Arthur Smith will hold the budget flat when it's because it's so volatile.
Mm-hmm.
And then the northern part of the state just hasn't been doing well with the line starting in Albuquerque and going north. So, you know, when you ask about the economy in New Mexico, it's not a one size fits all. It's almost, and that's how it is for legislators. If you are a legislator, it just depends on your district. We still have some of our counties in double digit unemployment. So, you know, it's going to really make their decisions different. You asked, like, what were our top priorities? And one of the things we did is got the business associations and the state together and said, what are our top priorities? And with Right to Work being the number one issue, and the workers' comp also a very important issue for us, we also, there's a lot of consensus on getting New Mexico to invest in itself. So we're looking at some procurement reform so that the state will be hopefully do more business with in-state businesses. you know, right now New Mexico tax dollars are very actively creating economic-based jobs in other states. And that's getting to be a little stressful and a little depressing for our businesses.
Frustrating to hear that. It's frustrating to hear that.
Yeah, it is frustrating. And so we're asking for something pretty simple. We're saying, okay, guys, why don't you, on that Sunshine Portal that was created by the state but was voluntary, so guess how many folks volunteer to put their contracts on there? That's about zero. We're going to mandate that you put your contracts, that we as taxpayers should be able to see who won the contract, who was awarded. And if that was out of state, we would like an explanation of that. We also have another piece of legislation that is asking for a random audit, not every RFP or request for proposal, but a random look at those by a group that already exists to see if there are requirements in that RFP, that request for proposal, that prohibit any New Mexico company from competing. And those happen all
the
time.
That's bizarre.
So the other thing we have to do with that group contracts is we have the state purchasing officer who is the chair of that committee and has oversight over himself. And we're like, you know, that's probably not the best checks and balance. Let's have that group have private sector folks on there, agency representatives, but the procurement officer, the person that's in charge of procurement for the state, should not have the final say about this. We need to be sure that it's a good checks and balance. And I, you know, and it's nothing that anyone's done wrong. I think it's just some long-time practices that for years and years and years have gone on, and I think we now have a chance to maybe clean that up and, you know, shine a light on a little bit on that.
That sounds good. I know you're on a tight schedule. Was there anything else that you wanted people to hear?
Well, just one more thing. We are kind of working to increase the tax cap on angel investment so that people can invest more in the state and get a tax incentive on that. And then we're asking that there be some dollars and there's some money in the SIC that's been mandated to be used for the economy of New Mexico to have a set-aside fund that would match that angel tax credit. So if you're an angel investor, or maybe you're not and you want to be, you would be able to invest more, get a greater tax incentive, and have that matched by the state, which would double, hopefully, the private dollars that we can invest into companies in New Mexico. So some exciting things, and hopefully I can talk to you toward the end of the session and let you know how those things are moving and progressing.
Thank you, Ms. McClure, and we really appreciate you taking the time to keep us informed, and you're always welcome to come in or call in.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much, and have a great day.
You too. Thank you very much. All right, folks. Let's take a brief break here and 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180. Bill, call in with your comment. Whoever else was calling in and got dropped, call in. I want to hear everybody's opinion. I've got a little bit on, I think Islam is a hot topic. I mean, it's how long before we have people shot in cafes, you know? Be right back, 742.
Don't miss the annual O'Blarney Golf Grand.
It's Kelly here, and all right, so I've got Carly Fiorina. That's when she says that liberals think that they're smarter and better than everybody. And you know, somebody who was Joyce's called in, don't call it right or left. I understand it's understandable that nobody likes to be, you know, kind of singled out and, you know, but we're, you know, I mean, we're in this game of life to try to learn and get better. I would challenge anybody who has a real liberal attitude, which is, would not probably be a lot of the listeners to this, of the show, even if they were Democrats. There's a lot of Democrats in this county that if they were living somewhere else would be Republicans. It's just the lay of the land here, but they're conservative people. I would challenge anybody to consider. I mean, I don't want to heap abuse on anybody who is just because they believe something different. But I challenge you: are your beliefs getting in the way of learning? Are your beliefs getting in the way of listening to other people? Here's Carly Fiorina.
Exec might just throw her hat in the ring for 2016. Former HP CEO Carly Fiorina is actively exploring a presidential run. She sat down with Washington Times chief political correspondent Ralph Hollow to discuss her vision of conservatives and America.
No one of us is any better than any other one of us. Everyone has gifts. Everyone wants to live a life of dignity and purpose and meaning. And everyone can live a life of dignity and purpose and meaning. And I think, honestly, the core difference between liberals and conservatives is that liberals don't believe that. They think some are smarter than others, some are better than others, some actually can't live a life of dignity and purpose and meaning, but never mind, we'll take care of you and we'll decide for you. Jonathan Gruber was very revealing about liberals, because what Jonathan Gruber said was what I think a lot of liberals feel. I don't doubt that they care, but I also don't doubt that in their heart of hearts, a lot of them think, I'm smarter than you are.
All right. So, and that's something that I, having worked in a university and been around a lot of, I've spent a lot of my life around liberal people. I went to school in a very liberal school, and I've just got it from, I used to get attacked all the time just because I disagreed with people fundamentally. We got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Aaron, Kelly.
Hey, Aaron, what's up? I'm running out of time. So, Aaron, I'm running out of time. I just realized I got more ads to play, but so just briefly, what's going on?
Well, first of all, Fiorina didn't come through on the radio, whatever she said.
Oh, gosh dang it. I was listening through my earphones, and anyway, sorry about that.
And the other thing, I think that one thing that we need to get over is, you know, there's a famous quote that says in a time of deceitful talk, the truth becomes a revolutionary act.
Uh-huh.
And I just think that right now we're in that time. Our current government, especially this current administration, continuously lies to us 24/7. They won't give us the truth. They won't speak the truth. And until we get rid of that attitude that it pays off, that these guys can get away with it over and over and over, until that comes to an end, I think we're going to keep spiraling in a bad direction.
Well, and I mean, I think people, and hold on one second, Kelly O'Connell, I'll put you on hold. Yeah, I think people are at a breaking point where they realize that what we've been trying for the last 5 or 10 years really isn't working, but they don't know which way to turn because, you know, the left is still doubling down on, or this administration is doubling down on a lot of its policies that are clearly not working.
Well, they're doubling down on their lies. I mean, they come on the news the other day, and the liberal press in this administration says a bunch of Egyptian citizens were, you know, killed, I guess maybe randomly.
Aaron, I got to run here. I got another call. So
right.
Could you just sum it up?
That's good.
Thank you. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Tom.
Yeah, hey, go ahead.
Yeah, there's 7,000 Westerners that are over there fighting side by side with ISIS, and they're allowed to come and go into this country freely.
That's insane.
Obama's administration is surrounded. He surrounded himself with the Brotherhood, who are supporters of Hamas also. If you Google that, you can find it on the Internet.
All right, appreciate that. Tom, anything else?
All right, go ahead, Kelly.
Thanks a lot. Folks, we got to take a quick break here. We'll be back. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in 805-6180. I'll read your text, and then I'll tell you a little bit about this immigration decision by the federal court.
The first Las Cruces Spanish market.
Introducing the Citi Double Cash Card. It earns you cash back now and cash back later with 1% when you buy and 1% as you pay. With two ways to earn on purchases, it makes a lot of other cards seem one-sided.
It's
Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
This is Art.
Art, okay. Hey, thanks for calling back in. We're just about on the air. You got great timing in about 10 seconds. What are we going to talk about?
Basically, Islam.
Okay. All right. We'll just 1 second. We'll be right back on. It's Kelly here, and I've got Art on the line, and Art was kind enough to drop out and call back when our guest was done. Art, you want to talk about Islam, and what are you thinking?
Well, I don't even know where to start. One of the things that when John was speaking about the history of Islam,
yeah,
I don't think the average person knows the history of Islam. The woman earlier today made the same statement too, that, you know, it didn't start that way, but it did. The history of Islam is quite clear. It started out brutal. John referenced when they were in Spain, how, you know, this was a time of learning. What everybody's leaving out of that statement, it is true. However, that is the only time in history probably that Muslims decided to coexist with the quote infidels unquote.
Uh-huh.
And that's what caused this, you know, great leap in, let's say, art and architecture and things like that. So, and part of me, I think, okay, what if the comment about it's only a small percentage. That to me is also political correctness, maybe at a lower level, political correctness is always trying to justify the actions. I don't recall, now I wasn't alive during World War II, but I don't recall reading about people who were talking about, well, they're moderate Nazis or they're moderate imperialists. Nobody was making excuses for our enemy like we do today. If the Pope were to start lobbing people's heads off, I'm sure there would be a worldwide outcry. They want to install a caliph, that's exactly what a caliphate would offer, because it would be strict Sharia law. So the apologies are starting to get old to me.
Let me just point out one thing. ISIS, believe it or not, I just happened to be lucky enough to have a lot of Muslim books on Muslim law, 40 or 50 of them, and have written some articles on it, just to lay out my bona fides there. ISIS is practicing Sharia law, believe it or not.
Oh, I believe it because I understand Islam and Sharia. But nobody else wants to accept this because it's horrific. Westerners believe in a culture of life. They believe in a culture of death. We can't justify that in our minds. We don't want to accept the fact that there are people who are bred to believe exactly that. Now, if I were a Muslim nowadays and I were one of the moderate types, as everybody calls them, I would be renouncing my faith publicly. If the Pope started doing this, I'm a Catholic, I would renounce my Catholicism. And I would make it very clear that I didn't agree with what was taking place. I'm not seeing that on a wholesale level anywhere on earth. Forget about this country.
Yeah, so what can we do, Art? You've thought about this long and deep. You've not fallen for the propaganda. And what can we do to allow Muslims in this country to have all their freedoms as Americans and yet protect herself against radical Islam?
I really don't have the answer to that question. I do know that during World War II, and I'm not suggesting
Japanese internment camps. But, do we put in internment camps Muslims?
Well, I guess as Obama would say, we haven't taken that card off the table.
Well, I mean,
I suspect that I'm not saying that we should do that.
All
so
right, how about this?
The delicate sensibilities.
All right, we're not going to do that unless we start getting a lot of attacks, and then I guess, like you say, every option's out there. But let me ask you this: isn't it to some extent the fault of the Muslims that they themselves don't clear this up? What the different groups believe, what they support. It seems to me that even in America, they don't like to talk about anything other than peaceful Islam either. It seems like if they stepped up to the plate, and we got about 30 seconds left, so go ahead and make your final point.
Well, that's what I mentioned earlier, is that if they would renounce their faith,
okay,
which
I've got
is
one more call.
A capital crime.
Art, okay. All right, anything else?
No, sir.
Thanks. You've got 30 seconds. Who's this?
Zarin Kelly, first step, I think we need to pass laws that totally prohibit Sharia law nationally.
All right. Okay.
That cannot be on the table in any community.
All right, Aaron, as I mentioned, we don't have time for any other points, but thanks a lot for the call. Folks, thanks for calling, thanks for listening in, and I really appreciate it. Is this the only show in the country that's talking about this? I mean, I'm sure it's not, but I feel frustrated that the national media and the national political process doesn't seem to be taking this thing seriously and trying to come up with ways to protect us while allowing rights for all Muslims that are not in those groups, you know? So there's no easy answers, but we got to start working our way through it. I'm going to take you out with a little bit of live. How about some Elton John, Tiny Dancer. Have a great day. Kelly O'Connell, KOBE, ciao.